Welcome to the Self-Publishing School Podcast. This is the podcast to listen to if you're an aspiring writer or an author who wants to be more successful. On this show, you'll learn how to write and launch a book successfully, all from the top authors and people just like you who are doing it at the highest level. I'm your host, Chandler Volt, the founder of Self-Publishing School, the author of the book called Published, and the CEO of selfpublishing.com. For free training on how to publish a book that sells 10,000 copies, go to selfpublishing.com/free training. Hey, Chandler Volt here, and joining me today is Rami Vance, aka Ari Vance. Rami's originally an SPS student turned SPS coach. He's the lead coach and creator of the fiction side of Self-Publishing School. So our Fundamentals of Fiction program, our Fundamentals of Fiction and Story, and now our full-time fiction program. He's written 29 books. He's coached 400 plus SPS authors, over 7,000 coaching calls in 5 years as an SPS coach. He also used to run a traditional publishing company. He's got a lot of experience, and a lot of experience in the trenches working with fiction authors. And so what we're going to be talking about today, which if you missed it, go back and watch it. If you missed his previous interview, that was all about the fundamentals of fiction. That's episode 64 of the podcast. So if you're working on your first book, or you're in the process of writing and publishing a fiction book, start there. And then we're going to assume that you've listened to or watched that, and we're going to build on that in this interview. So this interview is going to be nothing about the entry piece, but it's going to be about, now that you're published, how do you sell more fiction books, and how do you build a full-time fiction career? And that's what we'll be talking about today. So Rami, excited to have you here.
Thank you for having me here. It's been a while. It's been a while. We actually talk all the time, but it's been a while since I started, because it's hard to believe that I really started this whole thing because I caught a Facebook ad with your face on it. And I think it was January 2015.
Yeah.
And 6 years later, and here we are. So
that's wild. Well, hey, let's dive in. I want to start here. So someone listening to watching this saying, hey, I've written and published my first fiction book.
Yeah.
Or I'm right at that point where I'm about to publish. Yeah. Why is it not selling as well as I want it to? And then how do I sell more books? And I think this is the question just all the time from fiction authors. So can you kind of touch on those two things at the start?
Yeah, and that's a really complicated question, right? Because there's a lot of things going on depending on the genre you're writing in, depending on, how good is your story. And the thing is you don't have to have a great story to sell, but you have to have a story that kind of hits certain genre expectations. So, I think the way to start is kind of what are the mistakes that a lot of people make? And then kind of I can give a couple of simple little tweaks that people can do and practice. And it's still not easy, right? But at least you'll be headed in the right direction. So for example, when you are writing fiction and you're kind of committing to certain genres like romance or sci-fi or fantasy, and then you get into the sub-genres as well, there's certain expectations of those genres. And if you're not meeting those expectations, especially in the beginning of the book, then chances are you're not going to sell it. And if you're not advertising those expectations with your cover and your book description, you're not going to get people even into it in the first place. And then probably the worst thing that can happen to a writer is you've written a 2-book or 3-book series, let's say, and you do manage to convince people to buy the first book, but no one buys the second one. And that's just devastating, right? Because it's why, I'm getting people buying the first book, but hardly anyone's buying the second one. And chances are that's because you've probably made some fundamental errors in the book that kind of prevent people from doing it. So the error I made, right, in the first days was I had kind of pushed my book as an urban fantasy romance. But the thing is I broke the fundamental rule of romance, which is in the end, she dies. Right. And so that's not a romance, right? The prerequisite of a romance, just kind of in the classic definition, is they live happily ever after. They get together, they, you know. And so I was getting a lot of people buying the first book and actually reviewing the first book really well, you know, but, you know, kind of just reading the reviews, like you could see the writing on the wall. This was different, not what I expected, you know, like those kind of stuff. And the result was they weren't going into the second one. And so with some pivoting and kind of paying attention to the market and paying attention to the genre, I was able to fix that and then ultimately do some other things. So I think the number one mistake that, and it's wrong to call this a mistake, but often when things aren't working out for you, it's because you're kind of not hitting those key, you know, selling points. And it's harsh when we're talking about fiction and labors of love and passion and, you know, this is my story, but you do kind of have to hit the market selling points. And that's not just in the book description and the cover. That's also actually in the book itself. Like, is the book hitting those expectations? So one simple thing is clearly identify the genre you're writing in or the subgenre you're writing in. And you know, in the school, we refer to it as cyber stalking. And it's like, you know, the joke is like, and get creepy. Right? Cyber stalk these authors, like go through their garbage, like do whatever it takes to figure out what they're doing that is allowing them to sell. So.
And so you're talking about, so I want to unpack kind of two concepts that you touched on there, which is the concept of genre expectations and then tier ones, which you didn't say that, but I know that that's something that you teach.
Yeah, that's how.
And so let's start with tier ones, and then I want to work our way back to genre expectations and why that's important. So you talked about, you know, kind of cyber stalking authors, and I know that you have this concept called tier ones. And so can you explain what is that concept and how can that help bring clarity to the person who's saying either, you know, I'm trying to make sure that I'm writing to genre expectations, which we'll get back to in a second.
Right. Yeah. And I see you've been listening on the webinars. Yeah, no, but absolutely. That's what we call it in the school, is like figure out your tier ones. And so what a tier one is like, it's a set of criteria, and then kind of like, let's call them like guidelines that you can kind of attribute to your book. And then by extension, you can look at, you know, kind of these kind of key points, or really they're kind of like the generic points of your book that in sum make your book unique. And then you're going out. And so let's say you've identified 10 key points for your book. Then you're going out onto Amazon and you're making a real concerted effort, and it takes time and it's not an easy exercise, but you're making a concerted effort to find other books that are about a 6.5 out of 10 overlap with yours. Right. And you know, and this is like in the business world, and I know like in the nonfiction world, this is the equivalent of finding your avatar, right? You know, something that like you hear a lot in businesses and stuff like that. So our avatar is our ideal reader. But so should I go into a little bit about the algorithm and kind of,
Yeah, let's do a little bit of that. But I think maybe even before that, just can you paint a picture of those, like what would those 10 things be? What is, like, can you give us an example of like, okay, these are the traits maybe, and maybe using your book or one of your books as an example of, okay, these are the 10 traits. And then here's how I find that 6.5 overlap. And then this is what I do with it.
Right. Yeah. And I go through this in quite a lot of detail in the webinar, but in brief here, right? So I wrote a book called Mortality Bites, and it's effectively about a 300-year-old ex-vampire who's recently turned human again. She's biologically 19 years old, and she does what any 19-year-old girl does. She goes to university. And then, of course, in the first semester, someone tries to ritually sacrifice the entire student body. And because she was once a monster, she saves the day, right? So that's the story in a nutshell, right? So think a novelized version of Buffy the Vampire Slayer kind of thing, right? So when I look at that book, what are kind of the generic qualities of that book that in some make it a bit unique? So the first one is first person past tense. Tons of books with first person past tense. Female hero. Okay, we're narrowing it down a little bit, but really not much. Low romance. Okay, now we're actually narrowing it down, because a lot of female heroes, the romantic plot line tends to be a dominant plot line, if not just a straight up romance, right? So So low fantasy, low magic, which is to say that, yeah, we're talking about vampires and werewolves and the supernatural, but magic doesn't play big into my stories. And now you can see, now we're narrowing down even more and more and more. And then, you know, we keep going with some other criteria. And then we get to the tropes. So for those of you who don't know what a trope is, it's, you know, it's kind of like a common storytelling device that we see a lot in different kind of manifestations. And so a very famous trope is, ooh, look at him. Isn't he saucy? Oh my God, he's a vampire, right? So it's the Twilight trope, right? So, but the thing about the Twilight trope is that trope has been used for literally centuries, right? Because if you look at Dracula, the story of Dracula is the story of a monster, a vampire, pretending to be human while looking for the reincarnated soul of his dead wife. That's effectively what the book is. It's the same trope, right? A supernatural pretending to be human, looking for love, let's, you know, say. So the tropes that I use are, I'm uber powerful, but I just want to be left alone. We see this in like The Incredible Hulk, Jack Reacher. There's numerous stories that use this. There'll be a Scooby gang. By this, what I mean is that there are like mini sidekicks. And then finally, an anti-trope, which is, my book is not Twilight. I mean, it's low romance. But in my genre, the Twilight trope is massively used. Like a lot of writers will use it. And so I have an anti-trope. Like I want to stay away. I don't want to associate with those books. And so now that I have my criteria, I go out onto Amazon and I'll spend hours looking for books that are 6.5 out of 10 overlap with my book. And, you know, now I have direction on what the cover should look like, direction on what the book description should say, direction on how the book, you know, how the book should kind of unfold, you know, like start even, right? You know, of course it's not giving me everything, but it's giving me direction. So I'm not just randomly throwing darts in the dark, right? And so I guess just to loop in very briefly into why this matters is because Amazon, when Amazon's algorithm or computer is trying to sell you to the readership, right? They're looking at your early buyers. And if it's the right buyers, then they know who to sell it. But if your early buyers are your mother and her, you know, knitting group, all of a sudden Amazon goes, oh my God, Rami's vampire book, his ideal reader are women over 70 who love to knit, right? And, you know, and then they'll try to push my book to that demographic. And of course, that's not the demographic. And by the way, this really did happen in my very first book, because I told my mom, and my mom must run some kind of Gestapo or something. I don't know what she does, because she got all her like friends. And so in my also bots, it was all cookbooks. And my only thought was like, my mom just rules with an iron fist.
You know? So two follow-up questions or a couple follow-up questions. How do you, you talked about, you know, identifying those 10 things. How do you find those books and like, how do you actually find them, and how do you know if there's overlap? And then I guess to circle back and land the plane, like how do you then get in front of those right. type of readers so that you're creating kind of that positive momentum?
Well, Chandler, you're asking all the hard questions. How many hours do we have, right? Is the question, right? So I have to just go top line with those answers, because like the devil's in the detail. And so the first answer is, and I know this sounds like a cop out, but it's the truth, is you do your best, right? Because even getting close to it, it will yield way better results than not trying at all, right? And also, if you don't get it quite right, there's always the do-over. You can, you know, try with a new series, you can relaunch, you can do new promos, you can do a box set. Like there's a lot of kind of like second chances that you get with this. You can't abuse the system, and I'm not telling people to abuse the system, but they are out there. But in a nutshell, like the way I do it is that, you know, the average reader gives all of like 3 seconds to make a decision. And what's really telling about this, actually, and I know this is going to sound like a tangent, but it really isn't, is Netflix. Right. So if you go onto Netflix and you spend some time just kind of like, you know, watching random stuff. So I love sci-fi and fantasy. Okay. So if I spend like 2 weeks just watching like Downton Abbey and, you know, British soap operas and stuff like that, I'm going to get different things promoted to me. But what's amazing about it is it's all based on the cover, right? Like I'm not getting anything else but the cover. I'm getting an image and a title, and that's it. And it's the same concept here. So what you're trying to do is that you're trying to see what images, you know, and we're talking about like style of hero, color scheme, you know, font works. And then you're doing your best to emulate that. And it's hard, and it's not guaranteed that you'll do it right. And, you know, but like I said, you do have these do-overs, these second chances if you do it wrong. And so something I always talk about with the group in the group coaching calls and on the one-on-ones is like, you know, the people who fail, there are two kinds of failures in this, right? And the first one is the one who just gives up too soon. And, you know, like they got knocked down and they don't get back up and they just walk away and do something else. And sure, that's fine. But the second failure, and this is the more dangerous failure, is the person who will put all this effort in their launch and their covers, but they won't necessarily pay attention to the results, right? They'll skew the data to say something different, to kind of, it's like a self-affirming bias, right? Or confirmation bias, sorry, rather than kind of giving it an honest look. And so then when they do a relaunch, it doesn't work because they didn't have an honest reflection on what went right and what went wrong the first time. And it's hard. Like I don't, you know, and this is why I always say, like, talk to someone, like get someone who is knowledgeable to help you out. Whether it's a school or just another author, it's just like have someone to bounce ideas off of so that you're not kind of stuck in your own head. And I love that Witcher quote, you know, like, do not train alone. It only embeds your errors. You know, so I love
it. Yeah. Hey, Chandler Bolt here. I hope you're loving this episode so far. It's time to go from inspiration to implementation. All right. So if you've learned something, we want to help you implement what you've learned with your book. So what I want you to do right now is go to selfpublishing.com/schedule, book a publishing consultation with one of the experts on my team. We'll talk about your goals for your book, your dreams, your challenges, your next steps, and we'll start putting together a plan. All right, so go to selfpublishing.com/schedule, book a call with the team. Let's see how we can help with your book. It's time to implement. And that's great. And I love this, Rami. And obviously you mentioned this, the devil's in the details, and that's why you created the full-time fiction program. It's like really go into the details on all of these things. Yeah. Now, I want to circle back to you touched on genre expectations. And now we've kind of, you know, when you went through your tier ones, like, I think that's probably clicking for a lot of people. And obviously a lot of people write fiction, read fiction. So you can probably think of the genre expectations that you have when you pick up a book. But can you walk through kind of what are genre expectations? Why do they matter? And where does it apply? Because I think sometimes people will only think the marketing or only think the book side of things. But I love how you just tie kind of a through line through the whole thing to help sell better before they read, but then have a better reading experience turning into the series, which we'll talk about in a minute, and kind of all that. So what are genre expectations? Why do they matter? And how where does that show up in a way that helps fiction authors sell more books?
Yeah, you really aren't asking easy questions. Like, how's your day, Rami? You know, like, where are those questions? It's a great question. And it is really exactly what you said. It's like a holistic approach, right? Like, you can't look at this. You have to look at each part, but then you also have to look at how each part plays together. And so, so when you kind of look at the funnel of the book business, it starts with, so at the very top, it's attracting the right readers to your book page, right? And so you're doing that with like AMS ads, there are other ads like BookBub and Facebook, of course, and there's other ways to do it through promos, through author swaps, And then obviously like through Amazon's own real estate, because if your book is selling well enough, Amazon will push your book. You know, they'll send out emails on your behalf and stuff like that. So it starts there. Then you get them onto your book page, and through your cover, your book description, page one, your pricing, and then of course your social proof, like how many reviews you have. Hopefully that gets them in the door. But all of that part has to speak to one specific genre or subgenre, right? Like it's not romance, it's billionaire romance. It's not urban fantasy, it's academy urban fantasy, right? Like you know, if you speak just broadly, you're not going to get anywhere with it, right? You really want to find those readers who are really connected to your genre, right? Those are the low-hanging fruit. And what's more is by capturing those low-hanging fruit, you're literally training Amazon who your readers are. But then once you actually get them into the book, right? Like let's say they buy it. Well, you got to deliver. You got to deliver on the promise that you made on that cover and book description and so on and so forth. And so delivering on that promise means a lot of things, right? So first of all, it's got to be a good book and it has to be well-written. And by the way, well-written doesn't mean Shakespeare. Well-written means someone, a reader picked up your book, read it from beginning to end, and at no point went, huh, how did that happen? Right? Like that's what well-written means. It's not like, oh my God, his command of the English language. It's none of that. So, but if they're not kind of getting the kind of like expectations, right? Like the low-hanging fruit example being the romance, the couple get together at the end. If they're not getting that kind of core expectation of that genre being met, they're not going to read book two. And when you're building your book business, it's about building a series, right? And it's about getting people to buy book one and then motivating them to buy book two and then buy book three and then buy book four. And, you know, there's literal math formulas where you can figure out like, you know, how many people who buy book one need to buy book two and then need to buy book three in order for this to be a profitable venture for me.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Hey, and let's touch on that. So say I'm listening to this, watching this, and I've published one fiction book.
Yeah.
How do I know if I should have a series, who should have a series? And then can you connect that to what you were just talking about, which is read through rate and like why that's so important to actually build a fiction career?
Yeah. Yeah. So this is, I mean, like, it's just kind of like it's in business. It's what's the upsell, right? Like, and there's a kind of a mantra in business that the easiest customer to sell to is the one you've already sold to, right? And so, you know, kind of building off of those principles, and I'll be honest, like these are things that I have learned from other authors who have just, you know, are just massively successful themselves, is that, you know, you take these same core principles, these entrepreneurial principles, and you apply them to the book business. It's no different. So why a series? And if not a series, why be known for a specific genre? So think someone like Stephen King, right? He's known for the horror genre. Yeah, you know, yes, he's written some other stuff, but that's what he's known for. The average reader who reads Carrie will also read Cujo and Salem's Lot, and you know, the list goes on and on, right? And so the question always becomes, what's the easiest way to funnel your readers through, right? And it really is, it's a series. You're focusing on marketing one book one of that series. You're making that as, you know, as badass as possible to get them through to the best. You're increasing the value. This is how you build careers. And so the authors who I see who are, you know, like high six figures, seven figures even, are the authors who have multiple series in the same genre. And all of these series have just excellent read-through rate and sell-through rate. And some of them I know, a lot of them I don't know, of course, but the ones who I do know, they have like an engine going here where, you know, they're promoting older books to keep their backlist healthy, right? And they're constantly bringing in new books and stuff like that. Now, I know that sounds incredibly daunting if this is your first book, right? And Of course it is, right? Like if this is the beginning of the journey, but it's also the idea of, you know, we like, so for example, in fundamentals of fiction, like something crazy, like 80% of students who come in and successfully write their first book have write 2, 3, 4 more books. Like it's, you know, it's just the beginning. And the average student, or sorry, the average writer, the average newbie, you'll get much faster. You know, you get better at plotting, you get better at time management, you get better at kind of character development. And so, you know, we see and have seen over and over again where, you know, that's that person who's struggling to get like 5,000 words in a week done over time. And it does take time and dedication. You got to work at it. This isn't like easy, but over time can double, triple, quadruple their output. And if you're writing 15,000 words a week and the average book is 50,000 words, you're finishing a book a month. So getting that series and that backlist can happen faster than you think if you dedicate to it, if you focus on it.
So. Yeah, that's great. And from a math perspective, like I know you said this on the full-time fiction webinar, which is, you know, it's math, right? The easiest customer to sell to is the customer you already have. And this concept of, okay, if I can get someone to buy book one and then 40% of those folks buy book two, then that's an extra like lifetime value of that reader of X. And then if I can get 80% to buy book three, because now they're really committed into this series, and then 80% to buy book four, that comes out to a total cumulative lifetime value of a reader of $25 instead of $4, or you right. can insert the, so that's why it matters. And hopefully that math helps start to make sense for people of that's why the series is important. Now let's talk about the math within the math, which is the read-through rate. And I know right. On the webinar, you were talking about ways to improve your read-through rate. Cause for a lot right. of people, this is probably if you're listening to this, watching this, and you've already got a 3-book series, this is probably the first place you can start implementing to start yeah. making more money from your fiction is improving the read-through rate from book 1 to 2 to 3, et cetera. So can you talk about kind of 2, 3, 4, how many ever kind of top tips that you have to improve that read-through rate from book to book?
Yeah, sure. I'll give you like, I think probably like, and again, like, you know, end of the day, like it's your story. So you have to like what you're writing and you have to really connect with it. And in theory, if you're connecting with your story and you're presenting it well, then you should be able to get readers behind it. But the low hanging fruit kind of things that you can start to look at is number one, the cyber stalking, right? Like what are kind of the genre expectations? And having that honest reflection with yourself, like I'm marketing this as a romance and she dies in the end, right? Well, then maybe don't market it as a romance, market it as something else, right? Market it as literary fiction, market it as a thriller, market it as whatever, right? So this is one thing, right? You know, it's kind of like, are you hitting the right expectations of that genre? And either you pivot by, you know, changing the book so they do get together in the end, or start marketing to a different market. And this is one thing that will massively help with read through. But then there are little things that you can do. So like in the book itself, and there's small edits that you can make. So, you know, when we're kind of left on a cliffhanger, for example, or an unanswered question, we as human beings are just naturally like, we want to hear the answer, right? So if you're making an effort that at the end of every chapter, because, you know, let's be honest, like a chapter ending is a natural ending point. It's okay, I'm going to put this down, do something else, go to bed, whatever it is, right? And now are they going to come back to the book? Because that's the point where they might leave forever, right? But if you can just end each chapter with, and then there was a knock on the door, right? Luke, I am your father. You know what I mean? Like you're creating these little hits that that just kind of motivate them into the next chapter. You know, it can effectively be the same story with very mild edits. You're just kind of being a lot more conscious of where you're ending and starting chapters. this could be great. And I mean, there's nothing more satisfying than getting a review like, damn you, Rami, I stayed up till 3 a.m. reading this stupid book. And now I'm going to, you know, it's a fantastic review to get. Like, so that's just a little thing. And then the bigger thing is to actually get them into book two, right? So not just to the end of book one, but into book two or book three is something called open loops. And you'll hear a lot of author groups talk about this, right? It's just this idea of there's a question or something that just isn't answered in book one that leaves you going to the next books, right? And they can be little things like if you think the Avengers, what is the Tesseract? What is the Tesseract? You know, that just kind of kept us going for quite a few movies where it's like, we're going to get more clues on this darn Tesseract. You know, like I just keep going. And that's just a minor thing. That's just like a small thing that's kind of in the background and is never quite answered, but it just keeps you going to like Immortality Bites. My heroine, Kat, she's a 300-year-old ex-vampire, right? And her mother is also a vampire. And so throughout the first book, Kat would casually mention how her mom had tried to kill her multiple times over the last 3 centuries. And then the end of book one, you know, Kat saves the day, the villain is disposed, all of that stuff. And the kind of like post-resolution, you know, almost like movie cutscene is Kat hears a voice, you know, hello, Kat. She turns around and oh my God, it's her mom. And we kind of, and she just kind of goes, oh shit, mom. And that's like the last line of the book. And, you know, and it's a little bit of an open loop and it just kind of, you know, encourages them to go to the next book. And then of course you can do the straight up cliffhanger and that works, no doubt. Just be prepared to get tagged by a few pissed off reviewers who are like, I read 370 pages of this book and you just ended on a cliffhanger. Damn you.
Oh, that's fun. And I love that you're using the movie references as well, because I feel like that's something that everyone can relate to and think about how you can implement that. And if we're circling back to, you know, one of your original examples, it's like that could be, or that probably was why people loved the first book and then didn't read the second one, is because she died at the end. So there's huge resolution and no reason to move into the second book. So, hey, I want to transition here. So we're short on time. So I want to just do kind of a lightning round in this final phase, and talk about kind of some lessons learned for people, and then we'll wrap up at the end with next steps. So at the time of recording this, you know, we've just went through the first beta group for the full-time fiction program. And for those who don't know, there's the Fundamentals of Fiction and Story, which is all about writing a great story and publishing your book successfully. And then now our newest product is the full-time fiction program, which is all about transitioning from that to a series and ultimately the roadmap to a full-time fiction career. As of recording this, we're wrapping up the beta version, which is our first 25, 30 or so students through that program, and kind of rolling this out on a more on an ongoing basis. And so from that first beta, what are the commonalities that you're seeing, Rami, in the people that are having success? And now this could be, because I know you've kind of been incubating this for a long time. So this could be the most successful people coming out of Fundamentals of Fiction, because I know the beta has only been going for 90 days or so. So what are some of the commonalities that you're seeing that people listening to or watching this can model?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it boils down to that, like, they're treating it seriously. Like, they're treating it like a business. They're not treating it like a hobby, right? If you treat it like a hobby, it pays like a hobby. I wish I knew who said that. Or, you know what? I said, I know I heard that from somewhere, though. But, you know, if you treat it like a hobby, it pays like a hobby. If you treat it like a business, it pays. That's one thing that I see. Like, that's a big thing. And it pains me to say this, but especially in Fundamentals, like, you know, a lot of times on that very first call, it's like, okay, this person's a bucket lister. Awesome. Because that's okay, right? And I really want to say, like, if your goal is to just write a book, get it out to the world. And that's just, it was just on your bucket list. Awesome. Like, and genuinely, you're like my favorite student, because now screw genre expectations, screw all of that. No, we're going to write the story you love. Right. But then you got the student who wants to be full-time fiction, and generally they fall into kind of like the serious one, and then the one who just is hoping for lightning in a bottle. Right. And the serious one is the one who doesn't take it personally. Right. If there's a very low read through rate from book one to two, or if people just aren't buying book one, you know, it sucks. And it's definitely, they're taking one on the chin, but then they're going to take a deep breath and they're going to look at the data and they're going to go, okay, this is what I can do to fix this. Okay. You know, this wasn't quite to genre. Okay. You know, I wasn't marketing this right. You know, they're not taking it personally. They're, you know, and the other, actually probably the easiest way is there's kind of four qualities, right? You tell a good story, right? You don't take it personally, which I just kind of covered. You know when to pivot. That's another one, right? So a great example, Paul James, okay? I love this guy. Seriously, this guy is 70 plus years old when he came and wrote his first book with us. And it was some weird sci-fi confusion, okay? It was a good book. I'm not saying that it was a bad book, but it wasn't something that really worked to market. And so we talked a lot, and you know, and I don't know what it is about Paul, but Paul, like, just he's in it, right? You know, he's in it, and this is, he wants to do, make moves here. And so he went off and he thought about it, and he was like, you know, I really love Miss Marple. I think it's called Miss Marple Cozy Mysteries. And he wrote, and you can check it out, PC James, PC, not to be confused with PD James. PC James, he wrote a Miss Marple-esque cozy mystery. He's currently working on books 2, 3, and 4 of that series. And his book one is doing incredibly well. Like, just incredibly well. And the reason why is because he's writing a genre he loves and knows. He nailed the cover. The cover is just perfect, right? He nailed the book description. It's a good book because he focused on telling a good story. So he didn't take it personally. And he knew when to pivot. And sometimes pivoting is doubling down on what you have. And sometimes pivoting is moving into something else. And then finally, the last quality is consistency. You got to do this every day, right? You know, like, you got to focus on this. If you just kind of dive in and dip in and out and your focus is on 30 different things, you're not going to get anywhere in this. So
that's great, man. That's great. Love those four qualities. Hey, kind of final question. From my perspective, so if someone's listening to this, watching this, and I guess maybe two camps. So camp one, they're listening to this as an assignment before their first coaching call with you or with one of our other fiction coaches. And I think this will serve some, that's going to be the question I'll ask, but I think this will also serve well for someone who, even if they're not signing up for the full-time fiction program, like, they're embarking on going to implement this. Yeah. But let's talk specifically to the person who's listening to this, watching this, just signed up, is about to hop on their first coaching call. What advice do you have to them so that they can prepare to get the most out of that and then set themselves up for success?
Yeah. And the first thing I think, like, okay. So the thing is that, and I tell everyone this, like, this is a school, it's not a course. Right. And this is like a key distinction that I think needs to be made. This is a 1-year thing, right? It's not, we're not asking, you know, there are regular group coaching calls. There are regular one-on-ones, right? You know, and it's a year long thing. And so when I have a new student coming on, it's like, the answer is just show up, right? Just show up, right? Like, come to the group coaching calls, do the coursework, do the exercises, just show up, and eventually you'll come, because this is a marathon. This isn't going to be an overnight, you know, lightning strike. It happens. I've actually had a couple of students who have had lightning strikes, but I mean, they're by far the minority, you know, like the outliers, but this is a long-term commitment. So you just got to show up to it, do it regularly. But when it comes to actually just kind of the very practicality of just jumping on that first call, there's some core exercises. So in Fundamentals of Fiction, the core exercises, do your best to identify the 5 milestones of your story. I explained that in like an onboarding video of what that means. And then we talk about like, what are those 5 milestones? Do they work? Like what's working? You know, we talk about their goals. If it is a bucket list thing, then we just stick with the milestones and tweak that. If they're in it to win it, it's like, okay, well, this isn't quite the genre. Let's kind of tweak that and move that way, right? And then for full-time fiction, it's do your damnedest, and it's hard, but do your damnedest to identify your tier ones. And then again, on that first call, we're going over your tier ones and we're seeing, you know, what you did right, what maybe didn't work out so well. And I do my best to kind of guide the student to kind of finding their tier ones, or at least having a pathway to what that means for them. So
that's great. And a great place to start. So guys, if you're interested in joining the full-time fiction program, or even Fundamentals of Fiction and Story, if you're not to that point yet, go to self-publishingschool.com/full-time. That's self-publishingschool.com/full-time. Go ahead and book a call with the team. And that'll almost be even a first starting point, is where you'll talk with someone on the team. They'll talk about your goals for your book, your challenges with your book, your next steps, like how do you implement, if you're a fit and if you qualify to work with us. We'll talk about what it looks like to be part of either the Fundamentals of Fiction and Story program, the full-time fiction program, or both, depending on what you need. So that's the best place to go, and go ahead and book a call with the team if this is something that you're interested in. Rami's only going to be the sole coach in the full-time fiction program. We don't know how much longer. We're continuing to invest and expand and develop more fiction coaches. So if you want Rami as your coach, definitely book a call ASAP, but that's self-publishingschool.com/full-time. Rami, this has been awesome, man. Where can people go obviously if they want to go through the program, I already mentioned that, but where can they go to find and buy your books?
Yeah. Amazon Mortality Bites. That's probably the best place to start. That's certainly the story that it was the first story that I found, you know, kind of proper audience and success. So yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. Amazon Mortality Bites. If you want to check out Rami's books, and if you want to join one of our fiction programs, go to self-publishingschool.com/full-time. Rami, thanks so much.
My pleasure. My pleasure. All right.
Thank you so much for watching or listening to this episode of the Self-Publishing School Podcast. I know there's so many places that you could be spending your time. There's other podcasts that you could be listening to, YouTube channels that you could be watching. So thank you so much. It means the world. Now, I want you to do 3 things right now if you found this episode. All right, number 1, I don't know if you know this, but we've got a YouTube channel. It's a companion channel to this podcast. All the video versions of the episode are on the YouTube channel. So number 1, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Number 2, if you're listening to this podcast wherever, whether this is Spotify, Apple Podcasts, number 2, I want you to subscribe to this podcast right now so you don't miss a future episode. And then number 3, this is probably the most important, leave a review on the podcast. All right, reviews are super important and help the podcast get discovered by other people. So number 3, leave a review on the podcast. Thank you so much. I'll see you in the next episode. If you're on the fence about scheduling a publishing consultation call with my team, maybe you're not quite ready for that, I've got some free training that I think will be really helpful for you. All right, all you have to do is go to register to sign up. Go to self-publishing.com/free-training. When you do, you're also going to get a free digital copy of my new book, Published. And on that training, you're going to learn the next step, so how to implement with your book. So how to write, how to publish, how to launch successfully. So go to register right now at self-publishing.com/free-training. I'll see you there.